You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest on this episode, but an excellent one. And it will be someone who will take you behind the curtain at ESPN. Flora Kelly is the Vice President of Brand Strategy and Content Research for ESPN. I will let her describe what her job is, but this is somebody who processes all the metrics that come into ESPN, you know, viewership and social media data and all that, comes up with findings, and then obviously talks to the executives in terms of figuring out what strategies they should do heading forward. So it's a massively important job at that place. And with that intro, I bring in Flora Kelly. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for having me. You're right. If you think about what I do at ESPN, I am leading all ratings, digital analytics, consumer research, surveys, focus groups. But I think like at the heart of who I am is I'm a social scientist. I have my master's in social research. And I have the privilege of studying the culture of sports and the culture of fandom and sort of providing that information to the organization. Like we look at ourselves and my team, we look at ourselves as like the headlights of the organization. And so how do we drive our business and how do we drive our connection to ESPN through these insights?
Yeah, I think you have a really fascinating job. And so it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you. I know no days are generally speaking the same. But for my audience, could you just give them a sense of like what your day-to-day is or maybe like what your week-to-week kind of is?
I mean, my day-to-day is in terms of the reporting side, just really looking at our metrics constantly. How are we performing? Where are KPIs across digital, across TV, and sort of trending that over time and understanding where fandom is going. And then on a broader perspective is really sort of looking at what's going on overall across fandom, whether it's what's going on with younger sports fans and where is their fandom heading? What are the sports we should be focused on in terms of the up and coming sports? Giving really the why as to why we're seeing growth or why we're seeing decline. And really keeping, you know, the organization sort of in touch with that. And what that means is there's a lot of day-to-day reporting, but then there's also a lot of times where we as an organization or my team have to get together and say, okay, guys, slow down. What's the bigger picture here? So it's a lot of like rapid, get the ratings out, get the digital analytics out. But then it's also like, hey, guys, let's slow down. What is the bigger picture? But that's sort of my day-to-day. It's exciting. I would almost equate it, especially when you compare it to what happened Monday night and the next day getting the ratings. It's almost like being a political pollster on election day when you have these like big events and you see like what happens. Days like yesterday, I think, feel like what pollsters probably feel like on the night of a presidential election.
Okay, just so people know in terms of sort of the context, I'm taping this with Flora on Wednesday, April 3rd. She's referring to obviously Monday night's incredible viewership numbers for LSU, Iowa, and UConn, USC in the women's basketball tournament. We will get there. People will be listening to this, obviously, after the women's Final Four. And so, some of the viewership story when you listen to this could be dramatically changed. I mean, we may even see numbers that surpass Iowa LSU, but we'll get to that. All right, Flora, you said something interesting to me in terms of trying to figure out like what young people are interested in, how they're, you know, obviously processing their sports, where they might be interest, where their interest might lie as we are heading forward. So again, this is very sort of macro kind of question. I know you dial down on this data, but can you give my audience just a sense of like, okay, like what is the average like 25, 20, 23 year old male or female in the United States? Like what are they into right now in terms of sports and how are they processing sports?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about their fandom, it's very intersectional. I think like when I was growing up, and maybe with a lot of like Gen X or even older millennials, like we defined ourselves in like these very binary terms. Like I love sports, I love music. But for the younger fan, their identity is very intersectional. So within that, sports plays a role, but it plays a role within their other interests, right? And so what they're doing on a day-to-day basis is, yes, they're watching live games. You see that in the numbers that we are sort of generating, but they're also utilizing social media a lot. And so, and they're using it for sports. And, you know, that's one area that I'm really proud of where we really sort of advise, you know, ESPN to get aggressive on it. And our leadership, you know, took the chance. And that's why you see ESPN's the number one brand on TikTok, not just sports, on TikTok. And it's because we realize like we have to be where fans are to generate relevancy, not just for our brand, but to drive events in and of themselves. And I think like, Richard, if you think about just this past year and sort of the rapid growth of women's college basketball, but then even like college football and what Deion Sanders was able to do with Colorado. And even dare I say, I hate saying it, the Taylor Swift effect for the NFL. I don't think that happens without social media. It creates a hyper awareness for events and these cultural touchstones within sports that can now, I think, drive a rating and drive audience to a level that we haven't really seen before.
How often is someone in your job talking to Jimmy Pitaro, the chairman of ESPN, or Burke Magnus, essentially like the number two person at ESPN in terms of content? Like, is it something where you're talking to them daily, weekly? How does it work in terms of, because there's another point person for you, but these findings obviously would be key to how they ultimately run the business heading forward.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's less about talking to them and more about sort of getting them the information. And so they are rapidly, like they are reading every single insight, every single data point, and they are asking us questions, right? And they are sort of very focused on the trends and where things are headed. On a day like yesterday, you know, everybody, you know, there's a lot of back and forth, but you know, also I'm fortunate in that my boss, Shara Aguiar, is the head of finance, strategy, and research. And so she's really pulling it together also from a strategic lens. And she's also Jimmy's chief of staff. So there's a real line there. And also I feel fortunate because it's a very unbiased place that I sit in. Like we are the truth tellers. We sit in a very neutral part of the organization. I don't roll up into marketing. I don't roll up into programming. I don't roll up into production. I roll up into a very neutral place where I feel empowered to be as truthful and honest about where our performance is. And a lot of that goes to our leadership and the way ESPN structured the research department.
Yeah, that's interesting. You are sort of the neutral arbiters of this. All right, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to get to the women's tournament right after this.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question about something that I saw from your counterpart, if that is the right word, at Fox Sports, Mike Mulvihill. I have tried
my
hardest.
We're frenemies, Richard.
I know. I have tried my hardest on social media to provoke both of you into, you know, battling publicly, but you're both professionals and you have not done this. So Mulvihill says that he put out this week, most watched college football regular season ever. This is not just a Fox thing. He started talking about broadly. Mm-hmm. Most watched most watched college basketball regular season ever, most watched March Madness ever through the Elite Eight for both men's and women's combined. You're obviously in terms of, and his numbers were based on Nielsen. Mm-hmm. Are you finding this gets to me, and I'm sure this is true, but I think you could extrapolate it and sort of offer some insight. Mm-hmm. What it says to me is that the college sports space is kind of exploding and continuing to explode and moving. You know, I'm someone who wrote about women's basketball, obviously, for a long, long time prior to, you know, it's great to see it now sort of become more cultural. Mm-hmm. I would say, and this is not a new thought from people like me, women's college volleyball, the growth coming in if you want to get on a sport that's sort of about, I think, in a rocket ship, eventually get on that. Women's softball is another one. Again, you've seen the numbers now at ESPN growing over the years. But then, Flora, it gets into like some interesting stuff. Like, what else? Like, are we going to start to see like more movement in something like, I don't know, track and field or swimming, lacrosse, or, you know, the non-football basketball stuff. So what are you seeing broadly on college? Because interestingly enough, it does feel like a space where like there's a lot more room to grow.
Yeah, I think I would extend it beyond college, and it goes to the youth element. So one part is realizing for younger fans, everything's a sport. So they're not as kind of tied in into like just the traditional stick and ball sports. So they've been much more expansive and sort of looking at different areas, right? F1's a great example of that. And the way they were able to drive audience with younger viewers. I would also say this is really important to understand. We use sports poll a lot. I know we all live and die by ratings, but sports poll is a tracker that's syndicated. Anyone has access to it. It has 20 years worth of data. And what we are seeing in that is that currently there are 255 million sports fans. That's the highest levels we've ever seen. And it's outpacing population growth. And what's more interesting about that is while every single demo within that is growing, women are outpacing men. And so why is that important? It's important because I think the face of fandom is evolving a little bit. And so in that dynamic, you have to understand that if women are growing part of what fandom is today, then representation matters. So things like women's sports are accelerating within that. So I think you have this dual dynamic of younger fans just being more expansive and willing to try different things in terms of sports. They're not as sort of tied down as traditional older fans. And then you have a growing base of female fans where this matters, representation matters, and their connection to these female athletes matters. In fact, I would argue that connection is actually more intense because for them, it represents I'm supporting the achievements of other women. And this is a role model that I can pass down to my daughter and my son. And so I think what female athletes represent to this growing female fan base is so important. And that connection is, I think, deeper than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's talk about the women's tournament. You know, both of us obviously are fans of women's basketball. You have a real sort of business invested interest in it. I mean, I guess in some ways I do too. As we are taping this, we know the numbers for Iowa, LSU, that Elite Eight game. And that's that put us into a stratosphere we have never seen before. Most watched women's college basketball game in the history of television. Mm-hmm. We will eventually see how the UConn-Iowa game shakes out in terms of viewership and can it top it? Can it come close to it? NC State and South Carolina will be paying attention to as well. And then obviously the final, if Iowa gets there, just given the mass interest in Caitlin Clark, I mean, who knows what the numbers can be. So, Flora, when you've looked at this tournament this year, what's kind of interesting is that you really can't compare it historically to anything.
No.
Like, this is like an outlier unicorn where, I mean, it's great to have data, but what happens when the data doesn't really inform you of what's coming when you get these kind of numbers? So how have you seen this women's tournament, which, again, we're just seeing numbers that would have seemed inconceivable 5 years ago?
Yeah, and I'll just like contextualize the numbers like in a way so your audience really understands. And I think there's like three filters. It's one, how does it compare to like other big events? And this number was in the realm of like an NBA finals. It was outpacing things like big key events. If you compare it to like the Masters final round, it's in that realm, right? So that's one, right? So it has reached the stratosphere. We're not even in the final four, and it's reached this like, you know, NBA Finals, World Series, Masters sort of realm. Okay, so that's one. The second is within the tournament itself, that number within the whole tournament is the second highest rated tournament game, period, right? And so within the tournament, men's and women's, it sort of reached this next level stratosphere. But to your point, within women's college basketball, what has happened when you compare it against itself is these are growth rates that I watch a lot of CNBC, so I apologies to your listeners, are hyperbolic, right? And when something's hyperbolic, it means it has grown at a pace over a very short period of time. So this is, we hit 12.3 million. Just 2 years ago, the women's national championship game was at 4.9 million, which at the time was the most watched championship in 18 years. So we are in this hyperbolic territory, which is amazing as a sports fan, which we all felt in our gut was going to happen. But as a researcher, it creates a tremendous outlier. And as a researcher, it's almost impossible to predict at this point. So you almost have to like step away from the data and just go by gut at this point.
Do you, I mean, this is, you know, this was like my, This was my you know, Game of Thrones sort of like flag waving forever was to chastise ESPN for not putting the championship game on ABC. Finally moved it, okay? And we saw the numbers. I mean, again, you're going to listen to this and like the game will have been played. But, mm-hmm. you know, I really wish now that Iowa, UConn in particular was on ABC, just because I would like to know like what that number could be. Mm-hmm. You are the true expert on all this like sort of data stuff. When mm-hmm. it gets to like that kind of major game and people already sort of know about it, like is it a, do you consider it a massive like difference between a programming window on a network versus cable? I know you work for ESPN. I know ultimately at the end of the day, you know, you there's a business interest in whatever your answer is going to be.
Right.
But the realities of the numbers are that like, you know, the three, you know, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, they're still in 100 million home. Like households matter, right? They're still in 100 million plus. And so I wonder, I don't know, how do you see it? I guess, how do you see the ABC versus sort of ESPN dynamic when it comes to like significant events, Monday Night Football, et cetera, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the 12.3, I mean, I don't know if it would. It's hard to imagine that number could have been higher. And I also know when you look at, you know, we do have the national championship on ESPN and that hits massive numbers. And so I understand the sort of distribution dynamic, but I also understand if you're a fan, you have ESPN. And so even as you look and we look at sort of cable penetration. And yes, there have been major shifts away from linear, but when you look at fans, they've actually held pretty steady, specifically avid fans. And so I think when it comes to sports, and you're seeing it, right? You're actually seeing it right now. In a declining linear pay TV environment, ESPN was up year over year. Like it's hard for me to really, again, with a 12.3 million, with knowing the numbers we reach for a national championship game, to just simply say, yeah, it would be much better served on broadcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want to ask you two more topics here. First one I want to do is gambling, betting. You have done, obviously, a ton of research when it comes to ESPN Bet. And I think I saw this from you that the current – I'm fairly certain I saw this from your X/Twitter feed – The potential betting public or potential sports betting public is right now 41 million U.S. adults, and that's up significantly year over year. So obviously everybody understands why ESPN got into business, this business, and I don't want to be a moralist. The Athletic has a partnership in some manner with BetMGM. I've obviously been on podcasts that are sponsored by gambling, so. In your position, Flora, in terms of sort of analytics and research, like what are you studying? Like, are you trying to figure out what the potential market is for adults who will gamble? Are you trying to link the market between people who gamble and people who might watch or process ESPN's products? Like, how does gambling inform you in terms of your job?
Yeah. So what I would say is our involvement started from the beginning, and it may sound altruistic, but for us, it was about how does this help our brand and are we serving fans today? And so we did a lot of brand research leading up to the partnership with Penn. And so what we saw was getting into this space would strengthen our brand among younger adult sports fans. And one metric we study very closely and we watch very closely, given the dynamics in the current space, is innovation. And are we perceived as innovative? And what we saw was if we got into this space, it would be a net positive in that innovative realm. And so that was sort of one lens. The other lens was, is there a social stigma to it? And so we've been tracking among Gen Pop, not just sports fans, sort of the acceptance of sports gambling. And what we saw was like there was very little social stigma related to it. And so we just felt if you looked at it culturally, we were in the right spot for betting. And then when you looked at it within our brand, it was a net positive, specifically for that younger adult demo that is so incredibly important for us. We really hone in on the relevancy piece, and we understood that this would help us there.
Are you one thing that's I this is probably just specific to me in our little conversation here, because I've written about women's sports. I've covered for a long time. It's intrinsically fascinating to me. Are you seeing or have you seen any trends in terms of, is there any kind of increase in women, specifically women, betting on women's sports or women being interested? Like, it has most of the data that I've ever seen, it always skews so heavily male in terms of the gambling demo. But like logically, you would think if more of it's being legalized and more of it's being exposed to the public, it's just math, right? At a certain point, there has to be more women coming into the space. So what have you found from your research?
Yeah. So when we are sizing the market, it's correct. Current bettors heavily skew male. But when we look at that potential bettor category, it is much more female, right? And so what we're excited about as a brand is when we talk to consumers, the challenge for women and for a lot of more casual fans is that the sort of brands that are currently connected with sports betting have these like casino vibes, very like bro vibes, almost like exclusive vibes that don't feel as welcoming for a female fan. And we believe, and that's why we're excited, we believe with our brand, we can actually open up the market to these potential bettors who are interested in the space. They just feel like the current brands in the realm weren't really speaking to them. And so that's really, as we talk about the opportunity, where we're really excited.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Last one for me, and this is the NFL. The numbers for Monday Night Football were up. Some of that was great schedule. I think a lot of that, let's just be blunt, was games being on ABC, sort of people seeing it more. But here's the thing when it comes to football, Flora, is this sport is the one sport in terms of all trend lines and stuff like that. Like it only goes one way. Like it never goes down. Like the public interest never decreases. So I'm curious from your data, does that track with like Gen Y, Gen Z, and like younger people, or is, because I don't know this, I'm fascinated by it. You know, I used to be one who would be like, when people would say, oh, football is in trouble, moms are not going to put their kids in football. I just think it's too culturally ingrained in the country for that not to be the case. But I don't really know the data on like what a 14-year-old thinks of the NFL or what a 19-year-old thinks of the NFL. You probably have some of this. Is it as popular or potentially popular with that under 21 crowd as it clearly is with the 40-year-old male in Wisconsin or Maine or California?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, what you're saying is right, because we were even surprised at seeing like we're hitting new ceilings with the NFL, which was like fascinating for us. Again, I think it's like we've got to be expansive around the way we're defining fandom. Young people are fans. They are watching the NFL, but it's like the way they're staying connected to it, you know, social plays a big role in it. So I think, you know, I'm not seeing any stagnation or decline among younger fans, but I'm seeing the same trends in terms of how they're fanning and how all these other platforms are supporting their love of sport and for the NFL in general. So I think, you know, yeah, it's growing. And I think those dynamics, the intersectionality, the role of social to sort of drive back to that game exists for the NFL as well.
What is your favorite data point? Like what for you is just like, all right, when I really got to know something, here's what I'm going to actually check out so that it really will inform me. Or do you not want to give up trade secrets? Is this like a James Bond thing where you don't want to let me know?
I don't know if it's a favorite data point, and I shouldn't be doing this anymore because I run the research department, but I love talking to fans. I know it's never going to be a tweetable thing. I know focus groups don't scale up, but I just love moderating a focus group and hearing fans and talking to them one-on-one. And I still do it, which I probably should stop. Because it's in those conversations that it provides some like, aha, I didn't think of it that way, in a way that I can't with just numbers. So for me, it's not like a favorite de facto, it's a symphony, right? It's TV, it's digital, it's focus group. But personally for me, I just love talking to fans and just hearing from them. It helps me process the information.
I totally understand that. One of the things I was fortunate enough at Sports Illustrated was I got to know the consumer marketing people a little bit, and they invited me to sit in on focus groups just as a writer. It was so fascinating because you actually learn that people, one, don't read the way you think they read. That's one.
Yeah.
From my end. And two, they like stuff that you might not expect. Like you just, you know,
that's
like
right.
At Sports Illustrated, like in many ways, like the most famous part of that brand for a long time were these deep, long feature pieces. But many times, like the audience would just be like, no, we like this front of the book stuff where we can read in like 20 seconds. And it was like very, very, it was very interesting. All right, one last one for me, and I'm going to let you go. So this is just my own, sort of my own curiosity. I think what you do could easily be transferable to like politics in particular. And so do you think like, could you do this if like some campaign wanted to hire you, or some party wanted to hire you, or some whatever wanted to hire you? Is it the same skill set to basically analyze what people's likes and dislikes are and then contextualize them and present them in a way that the strategy would exist? So I guess what I'm asking you is, like, it's sports happens to be the medium for you, right? But it doesn't have to be sports.
Yeah, I would say you're spot on. I think the most analogous career to mine would be a political pollster. And in fact, we use vendors who do political polling for a lot of our work, just because they have the strategic chops. And I think it's the same dynamic. Even with the rating stuff, again, it's the same dynamic. Like, you're waiting the next day for your results, understanding where consumer sentiment is with polling to see, am I trending in the right direction? Absolutely, I would say it's analogous to that. And it's actually my background. I did work at SRBI, which was a political polling firm, two careers prior to my career at ESPN. So 100%, 100%.
Do you ever, you know, I know you are in many ways sort of like, you know, like back office, they'll call it, or something like that. But do you ever get to events? Like, I think what would be interesting to me would be, like, I think there would be value for you to actually go to like a national championship game somewhere and just maybe even like talk to fans, you know, or like, because that would be really interesting for you to see the data up close. But again, I, you know, you're not in programming, you're not an on-air person, but do you ever get to actually sort of see the live human beings who create the data?
Yeah. I mean, we do get to go to events. What I like to do for my team and what we've done for some folks is like make sure they get behind the booth, like when there are events being produced, because there's a subsegment of my team that is helping our producers figure out what to sort of develop. And to be a really good consultant, they really need to understand the meat and potatoes behind it. So that's one element. And then you're right, the second element is talking to fans. I used to actually do that for the X Games. I would go to the X Games and we would do that there. We do events in stadiums. It doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily like an ESPN event, but when we do talk to fans, we like to make it as organic as possible. So we have, you know, had things in sports bars, in games. And I mean, by the way, like for the everyday fan, it's probably not in the game, it's at home. So we actually love actually doing ethnographies where we go into people's homes and we really see them in their natural state. My favorite ethnography was I went to a fantasy football draft party for these like middle-aged boys, and I have a middle-aged boy myself, and it was just so amazing to just see how much fun they were having and like the conversation, and people just like really let loose and tell you what they feel. So yes, we have, but I would say the best groups happen actually in people's homes, which is how most people are watching games.
All right, last one. I'll make it easy for you. I'll make it an ESPN property. Give my audience an ESPN property that they should pay attention to, because 5 years from now, it's going to pop more than it's popped right now. Could be anything.
I mean, it's not an easy one, Richard. You lied. That's not easy, but you're my friend. But what I would say is, and this is going to seem like a cop-out, but it's not. I would say women's college basketball. If you look at that fan base, 60% of them say they have been a fan for less than 5 years. So we've been able to have this tremendous growth in a sport that is in its first stage, right? Because a lot of fandom is passed down. And so we're not even in that like passed down stage yet. And so I actually think there is a lot of growth still to be had with women's college basketball. And that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Flora Kelly is the Vice President of Brand Strategy and Content Research for ESPN. My advice, if you're interested in this, to follow her on her social media account. I follow her on X / Twitter, and you'll always get great insights. I talk to obviously a lot of people who are front-facing broadcasters, writers, etc. But the most interesting jobs, generally speaking, in the business are people like Flora's jobs. People who sort of really like look under the hood and ultimately like help produce this larger sports ecosystem. Flora, listen, it's good of you. I know you don't do a ton of these, so thank you for the time. I appreciate it. I have tremendous respect for you, as you know. I think you have a vital, vital job at ESPN, obviously, you know, the most, if not one of the most important sports brands out there. And I'm surely we'll stay in touch. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my thanks to Flora Kelly, who's really, really just excellent, at least from my perspective at her job. And ESPN's got a real ace in that position. I hope they know that. I think they know that. Head to the archives if you like this kind of stuff. Recent guests include Andrea Carter, speaking of women's college basketball, at ESPN, Becky Lynch, Jack McCallum. Trying to think who else. Pablo Torre was on this podcast not too long ago. My colleague Andrew Marchand. We did three Daily Iowan writers who have covered Caitlin Clark this year at the University of Iowa. So again, hopefully if you like these conversations, there'll be something for you. Leave us a nice five-star review and a note. That is how this podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.